This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Friday edition of Invest Talk. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. And, of course, everybody is welcome, whether you're a longtime investor or brand new to investing. You're welcome here, and we expect your questions. If you hear a term you don't understand, some kind of a term or a phrase that you don't know what it means, give me a call, ask about it. We'll talk about it. Our lines are always open, but during our live production here, we can get into a conversation. We don't need texting, email, Twitter, or Facebook. We can do a two-way conversation on the phone. You can do that. But you can still text us, email us, Twitter us, or Facebook us. That's what. On Fridays, we'd like to give you some highlights from our weekly premium newsletter. In my market commentary this morning, I wrote that it seemed that this week everyone was focused on falling oil prices and subpar spending on Black Friday weekend. Not too many were anticipating this morning's jobs report. Well, this morning's official jobs report came in, and it was a big surprise. 321,000 new jobs. That is quite a lot. We only expected like 240,000. And for the previous months, they increased it by 40,000 jobs. It's interesting, though, that it did not reduce the unemployment rate. Didn't do that. More people came into the labor market. How's that possible? And besides oil, retail spending, and the jobs numbers, which were all important, of course, we also had some quarterly numbers on productivity. For the third quarter, it rose 2.3% from 2% for the second quarter. And that was a bit less than expected. The U.S. dollar will continue to be stronger than other currencies, and oil is traded around the world in dollars. Therefore, the effort by OPEC to let prices fall by keeping their production levels even, trying to force marginal producers out of business here in the United States, especially in the shale, probably won't work. That's part of the premium newsletter that went out today. That's the kind of thing I talk about. Try to give you some insight of what's happening. Anyways. And to sum it up this week, I talked about how we responded to the current market, how what KPP Financial is doing in the newsletter. In our portfolio management section, we addressed fixed income assets. We gave a couple of stock ideas in there. Also this week in our Consumer Watch, I talked about gift cards, you know, and what are some of the limitations and some of the benefits there. So, and you could check on the pros and cons of gift cards at a particular website. I gave you that, scriptsmart.com. That was in the newsletter. Now, of course, we had a weekly stock idea. You know, we always do. That's always there. So how did this week treat your portfolio? I'd like to hear about your investing experiences. The markets are eking up, surprisingly so, but a lot of people aren't going up with it. And I will say that I'm having trouble going up with it too, because it's pretty narrow. What moves up is narrow, dragging the indexes up with them. It's a very, very interesting market. Now it's time to get your voice on the program. Let's move on and take a question right now on our 24-hour listen line. This one came in after our program last night at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. This is Brendan. I call the show once in a while. I also bought some Yugo stock back in the day and lost all my money. I understand there was a world court ruling, and I wondered if there was any procedure in place to get restitution. All right. Thank you.
888-99-CHART again is our number. And Yukos, everybody remember Yukos Oil? Khodorkovsky was the CEO, and Putin basically put him in jail because he had political aspirations. And so what he did is Yukos Oil was one of Russia's largest oil companies back then, privately owned. Quote-unquote, privately owned, and now is now part of Russia's national oil company, Gazprom. So Putin put him in jail and then took the assets. Of course, he used, well, they didn't pay their taxes. No one pays their taxes in Russia because you can't. Because your taxes, if done exactly how the laws state, you could end up ending more than the sales that you had. Paying more than sales. You're going to ask, well, how's that possible? Well, think about it. We could actually do that here in the United States. You have, let's say, your corporation, and they say, okay, we want you to pay 50% of your profits in taxes. Okay, then the state says, well, we want 30%. Then the county says, we want 20%. And the city says it wants 10%. You just gave away 110%, 120% of your profit. You see how that can be? Russia is worse than that. Anyways, can you get restitution? Well, not in Russia. Remember, it's a Russian company. So the court system here in the United States has to try to protect investors, and therefore you might have court decisions saying that you owe investors, but you're not going to probably get anything out of it because it means that you eventually have to get the money from Russia unless there's assets here that we can take. And then that's going to be a long, drawn-out process, and I don't have much hope for it. You will get from the SEC, if it's possible, you will get from the SEC what's called a proof of loss. When any company goes under or gets sued and there's a settlement or whatever, you will get what's called a proof of loss from the SEC, and you have to prove that you owned it and how many shares you had and over what period of time, and then they determine how much money you get. And until you get that, you're probably not going to get anything. Anyways, since mid-2009 through today, REITs, Real Estate Investment Trusts, have returned about 214% compared with 151% for the S&P 500 and 149% for the Russell 2000. Isn't it interesting the small caps have been not as good as the large caps? Just as a side note. Now, is it now the right time for REITs? Think about it. They've gone up much better than the overall market. So is now the right time for REITs? Well, we're going to talk about that. That's one of our talking points. Maybe it is. I like REITs conceptually. I think it's a good place to be. Remember I promised I wouldn't talk about oil anymore this week? Well, I lied. I want to talk about reserves, oil reserves in the United States, just briefly. I also want to discuss why the U.S. debt is no longer a problem. Why is the U.S. debt no longer a problem? And the 10 biggest risks to the stock market next year. Now, this is an opinion piece by Jeff Reeves, and these are his opinions, and I agree with several of them, but not all 10. But these are the biggest threats to the stock market. Mind you, I think the economy is going to grow next year again. I think it might even pick up. I think it's going to pick up growth next year. And so there are going to be more jobs. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the market's just going to go in one direction. It generally does not. It will have corrections, and they can be big. But I don't see a bear market. I don't see a bear market on the horizon yet. What happened in the stock market today? Well, the Dow's up 57 points, and the Nasdaq up 11, and the S&P up 3. Continues to claw its way up. Don't be surprised if we get a weak market in January. Remember last year it was down 6% in January? Don't be surprised if we get a kind of a repeat performance, because you have had the market up since mid-October. It's interesting because mid-October was a low. It lost 10% from September to October in the middle of October. By the end of October, 2 weeks, it made it all back. And now it's higher. You know what is not higher? What is not higher? Excuse me. The Russell 2000, the small cap stocks. And to be honest, they are almost exactly where they were at the beginning of the year. For 12 months, 2,000 stocks index, Russell 2000, are where they were at the beginning of the year. They haven't made one move up. Now, that's not the overall market, but neither is S&P 500. That's only 500 of the biggest stocks. It is up. Or the Dow 30, which is 30 super large stocks. But the overall market you know, there's sections and places that are really struggling. Now, if you look at the NYSE, the New York Stock Exchange Composite, it's right at where it was in September. Not a new high. Well, it's not even quite there, even there. But it is up for the year. I mean, it's up about 4 or 5% for the year. That means the all stocks on the New York Stock Exchange. But that's not all stocks either, because not we're not counting the NASDAQ, where the Russell 2000, most of those are where that lies. It's just kind of interesting. Now, you come first. We want to hear from your, we want to hear your questions. 888-99-CHARGE, how you reach us right now. And you can call us up and talk about any money topic on Invest Talk. 888-99-CHARGE. So, should you buy a REIT, real estate investment trust? There's hundreds of them now. Hundreds of them. So, there's so many different kinds that there's argument that, well, maybe you should be buying REITs. I do think it is part of a good diversified portfolio. I really do. I mean, I think, you know, they've outperformed over the recent years, the last couple of years, and that does worry me a little bit, because people are reaching for yield. And to get that yield, they what they do is they go out and buy things that produces the yield, but that demand drives these things up in price. And a very, very common area of high prices now, we've talked about it, are high yields, high yield bond funds, and oil and natural gas pipelines, those kinds of assets that make lots of money, master limited partnerships, publicly traded, and those things have been very, very much in demand over the last few years, and has pushed those prices up, those things, to where it's no longer appetizing. It's no longer at a point where you can make the returns are 4 and 5%, which are still good in this environment, but 2, 3, 4 years ago they were 8 and 9%. So now we're looking at, do you buy REITs now, real estate investment trust? I think you need to consider them. I do. But the vast majority of them, I'm going to say no. Remember we had a call yesterday? I had a call on an ETF, which was the Pintus High Yield ETF, high yield. And if you remember, the caller said, why has it been going down, and should I get rid of it because it's moved down so sharply? I looked it up. It has 28.9% of its high-yield bonds in the energy sector. Remember I said that the problem you have is the peripheral oil producers and then Shell are under a lot of pressure and because of the lower oil prices, and this high-yield bond fund has a lot of oil exposure, it would drive it down faster. And exactly what it did. It is one of the highest exposures at 28.9%. One of the highest exposure to the energy area. Buying an HUD home from the government requires some studying and planning. Do you have experience in this area? Do you want to share it with us? I would love to know something about that. Give me a call or pick your topic. 888-99-CHART.
Thanks for subscribing to our podcast. Since you're a regular listener, we'd like to get your feedback on the podcast. What would you like to hear more about? Do you have a question for Steve or Justin that you'd like a personal answer to? Just go to investtalk.com, click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin. Your note will go directly to them, and they'll get right back to you.
888-992-4278. Let's get back to our open lines, available to you anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Same number, 888-99-CHART. Here's a call.
Hello there, it's Ross from the UK here. I wonder if you've got a current valuation for Barclays. The ticker symbol is B for Bank, C for Charlie, S for Sierra, BCS. I just wondered if you had a current valuation for that stock. Thanks. Bye.
Barclays PLC, it's out of the United Kingdom, British financial service company operating in over 50 countries. It's a $63 billion company, so it's quite large, for large cap. Pays a 2.7% dividend yield. Management doesn't really own any, and there's hardly any ownership by mutual funds, which is kind of interesting. You would think that they would be a bigger owner of this stock, maybe because it's out of Europe and everybody's afraid of it. But they're in 50 countries. I don't think you should necessarily be afraid of it. It has been trading sideways for ever since July, up and down in a pretty narrow range. And even in the correction of October, it only went down to about $13.50 from the range of $14 to $15, so it only dipped a little bit. So that looks pretty pretty solid to me, because it in a correction, it doesn't correct too much, and it's been moving sideways. So they're going to make $1.63 this year per share and $1.75 next year. And they made $1.25 the year before, so it's moving in the right direction. Sales growth is flat, though. Pretty flat. Now, bear in mind, they made $5.38 in 2007, and now we're looking at $1.75. So, you know, but of course, the high in 2007 was 62 and the low was 38. In 2009, the low was $2. Okay, that's how bad it, and now it's 15. I kind of like it. My value on the stock is about $20 a share. So that's a 33% increase from here. I can see it easily going to $20 a share. I can't. And it would be that, it'd do that much faster and lost better if Europe would turn around. And will, and that's really your big question. Is Europe going to turn around? At what point? You know, it's not going to stay in the doldrums forever. But I don't see Europe, quote unquote, doing really anything to stimulate their economy. They talk. There's a lot of talk from the ECB, European Central Bank, a lot of talk, no action, or very little action. The various governments in the ECB, they're not doing much. Nope. So it's not going to be soon. The European economy is not going to be soon. I think it's going to be a very long slog. Kind of reminds me of what happened to Japan when, from 1989, when their market crashed and their real estate market crashed. And they got in a deflationary cycle, I mean, for 20 years. I mean, 10 to 20 years, this deflationary cycle. Europe feels like that might be happening to them. You got to take bold steps, and they don't have the ability to take bold steps. EU does not. Anyways. Shell fuel, remember, I know I told you I wasn't going to talk about oil, but this was really interesting to me. You know how we've been having our Shell oil fields, okay, and the fracking and all those things, and how it's really knocked down oil prices. Us producing more oil is really good for us. And, you know, this has all been done on private land, with private companies, with innovation. You know, free market does work. And this has been a free market move. But what's really interesting is that we have now done so well that not only are we pumping a lot more oil out of the ground, but the reserves have dramatically increased. Reserves is that oil that's in the ground that's available to pump out. And our reserves have increased 80% since 2008. 80%. We're now looking at an added 5.5 billion in new reserves added just recently. What is since the end of 2013? What do you think our reserves are? They're $36.5 billion. Now, you probably don't know what that means, but that was about a 10% increase. 9.7% increase. And that is close to the peak we've ever had since, and that was in 1970, which was 39 billion barrels. These are reserves. This is in addition to taking it out, but what's still left in the ground that we can take out. We've been adding to our reserves last year, the year before, even though we're pumping faster and faster, we're still adding to the reserves. Now, I want to give you some perspective, because is 36.5 billion a lot? Well, Saudi Arabia alone, in the reserves underground of that desert out there, Saudi Arabia, they have 266 billion barrels of reserves. So our 36.5 billion does not look like a lot when you start comparing it with Saudi Arabia. And, of course, Russia, Canada, they have much bigger proven reserves than we do. So I'm just pointing out that our reserves are increasing. And reserves of that oil, not that it's there and available, the pump. Because we do have reserves, different category reserves. We do have reserves that probably are not available because of the price point, because reserves are based on how much it costs to get it out of the ground. Now, did you spend too much money last year at Christmas? We have some ideas to keep gift giving from busting your bank. Invest Talk Personal coming up in the next half hour. Invest Talk. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. The phone number is 888-99-CHART. Whether you're a beginner or an experienced investor, it does not matter. We're here for you anytime you have a question. So let's hear from you this hour. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Elias. I'm calling from Danville. I just had a question about ticker symbols, the different exchanges that they trade on. For example, I'm looking at Roche Holdings, and it's listed on over-the-counter, and then the exchange is PINK, PNK. Am I taking on any risk, extra risk, if I were to invest in this company versus, say, another biotech company that is on the NYSE or one of the U.S. exchanges? Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Yes, you're taking exponentially more risk when you're dealing with a company, any company, that's traded on the pink sheets. That means, when you see pink, that means they're not even on an exchange. That's what that means. That means they're penny stocks. That means they are 80 to 95% of them go out of business. Yes, exponentially more risk. Okay, you really want to stick with the stocks traded on the major exchanges, which is New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. Why? Because each of those exchanges have requirements. They have requirements of GAAP, general accounting principle requirements. They have requirements of certain size and certain financial metrics that these companies have to make, to make sure they're viable companies. And of course, even then, companies still go out of business. But when you trade on pink sheets, that means that those companies are not even, they don't qualify. Now, it could be that they're real small and someday they'll qualify. High, high risk when you're looking at any companies traded on the pink sheets. Now, I'll say this. There are some big companies on the pink sheets, especially foreign companies that just haven't filed to be traded on our exchanges. So it's not all of them, just 90%+ of them are bad. And I don't want to say bad. I would just say high risk, exponentially higher risk than if they're traded on an exchange in general. Good question, though. Very good question. Pink sheets, everybody. That's penny stocks. That you see pump and dumping. You see a lot of manipulation in that area because these are stocks selling for 30 cents, $1.50, whatever, really cheap. And so it doesn't take a lot of money to push the prices up and down and usually have low liquidity. In other words, there's not a lot of trading going on. You got to be really – that's not an area you should be in. It really isn't. Okay, let's go to Mal in Lafayette. How you doing, Mal?
I am doing great, Steve. Doing great, Steve. Long-time listener. Love your show.
Thank you.
I have a question for you. So early in the year, January, February, I took profits on, you know, three-year positions that were really nice to take and thought I could come back in lower, about 60% cash portfolio. Never have gotten back in because it's been climbing and I keep waiting. And I'm wondering what your thoughts on a strategy are. I'm sure other people have done the same. Given that scenario this year. It just keeps climbing, and it's painful to watch when you're not fully participating.
Mel, welcome to my club, because I kind of did the same thing. I don't, you know, everybody thinks money managers have this, you know, crystal ball, and we know what's going to happen. No. Now, one thing I will say, I started buying after this 10% correction. During that correction, I was starting to buy.
Well, it happened so fast.
It was pretty fast. I know.
I was ready to pull the trigger on things that I had targeted, and in 2 days it was gone. And I got a little hesitant. So.
But let's deal with your question. You say, okay, you're in this position now. What do I do now? And to be honest, Mel, you could be very selective and maybe buy half position here and there, but don't be overly aggressive. Because do you remember last year in January the market corrected 6%?
Yes.
I wouldn't be surprised if it does it again. And it might even be this month, starting this month in December.
Well, that's my concern. That's my concern as well, is while it has continued to climb, you have to believe there is going to be some type of pullback simply on profit-taking or maybe a little bit of news of some type. That gives us, you know, a little drop back. But what are you thinking, you know, first, second, third quarter next year? Right?
Yeah,
looks
see,
like
I think,
everything's on
I think
good
the,
position.
I think the market's going to go up next year again. I don't think it's going to skyrocket like it did, you know, in 2013. I think it's going to be more like this year. Next year's going to be more like this year. Because GDP is still going to grow. We have oil prices down. We've got more jobs being produced. But we're going to have our problems. And like... those problems we have are going to be because of Europe is it looks like it's going to go into recession or it's just hovering around recession. China's you know, very slow, much slower growth than it was last year, slower this year. So it's we got those issues, those kind of issues. As a matter of fact, I'm going to talk about on the show what the other issues. By the end of the show, I'll tell you the 10 or so risks for the market in 2015. So, but Mel, I think you need to be a buyer of the market on those dips. You grit your teeth and just buy something, you know, and get some of that money to work. And yeah, man, the market is overvalued, but it's not terribly overvalued. So
Well, I listen to you. I listen to you weekly, Steve, and I've been alongside of this for a couple of years with KPP and your show. And I can honestly say I haven't lost any money in the last, couple of quarters because I haven't been invested, which makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. But, boy, the opportunity cost has been eating away at me.
Yeah, but also remember, the Russell 2000, Mel, is flat for the year. Don't think the whole market is not moving up, not by a long shot.
Right.
You know, so
absolutely.
So don't beat yourself up because you're sitting a lot of cash. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I really don't.
I'm beating myself up just a little bit. I always justify it with I haven't lost any money, so I can sleep at night. But anyway, I really do like what you're talking about, Joe. Thanks for all of the great advice over the years.
Thanks, Mel. Appreciate the call. Thank you for the compliments. But believe it or not, I do like them. I try to be as honest as I can. I really do, you know, within the parameters of the SEC rules, you know, that I'm not supposed to tell people what I trade in and out of. I can't mention stocks. I can't tell you. I'm not supposed to do that. So I can't. I can only answer questions. Now, here's a question from a listener following us on Twitter. It's from Henning, who is asking about Taser. Symbol TASR. He said it has a great run over the past month. Do I take profits? So obviously he owns it. Or do I let it run? Thank you. Yuletide greeting. So let's look at Taser. And everybody probably knows who they are. We're talking about Tasers. Right? Develops advanced electronic control devices for law enforcement, military corrections facilities, and consumer markets. What's nice about Taser is it's very consistent. It's been consistent for a number of years now. 4 years ago, it made 27 cents a share. 3 years ago, 37 cents a share. This year, it's going to make 38, which is only a penny increase. Next year, 47. Sales have been increasing in recent quarters. And we're talking about the most recent quarter, sales were up 26%. Now, it is a small cap stock, $1.3 billion. It's a small company. And it has skyrocketed. So the question is do I pull the money? Do I take, when you're growing 20%+, both earnings and sales, you can see why it's skyrocketing. It's on a breakout, what we call a breakout now. And what you want to do is you want to follow it up with the breakout. It is overpriced. 47 cents in a $24 stock, is that worth? 47 cents a share, is that worth 25? $24, $25 a share? No. But it might be if it keeps growing, right, this fast. That's why you get this. That's why you get overpriced, because of the fast speed of growth. So what do? Well, you follow it up with a stop. Okay, meaning, okay, it's at $24 today. You know, if it falls 10%, get out. Take it. And as it goes up, you keep moving your stop up with it. And that way you ride it as long as you can ride it. Okay? And that's what I would do if I was in it, because it's now becoming overpriced. It's now turned into a momentum stock based on its momentum of sales and earnings growth. And so you want to stay with momentum as long as you can. But now you start thinking about in terms of, well, when's that momentum starting to ease? And the problem with many of these high growth stocks is the stock could collapse 10%, 15%, 20% in a day. Then what do? It happens. It's frequent. But you don't want to pull it too early either. So you ride it as long as you can ride it. Mutual funds are buying it heavy. And management owns 5% of the company. There's no debt. Looks good. Fundamentally, it looks good. Return on equity is 20%, much better than we like. You can't argue with those numbers. Managing a company 401k plan can be a big burden, as we all know. If you'd like to explore a way to lighten that burden, if you're an employer, or you can even suggest it to your, if you're an employee, suggest it to your employer. We have a solution for that. We do. It's called our 401k solution. On our website, investtalk.com, on Contact Justin, just click on that and write in 401k, and we'll send you a packet of information.
Want to sign up to be an InvestTalk insider? Don't miss out on access to helpful investment watch lists and chart lessons. You get instant access to our library of webinars, too, updates providing valuable market guidance also. Sign up when you're ready for free on investtalk.com.
And as we know, the holidays are here and everybody's out spending money. And the very common complaint in January is I overspent in December. So how can you stop that? How can you control that? Well, this is InvestTalk Personal, everybody. The day-to-day decisions that can have lasting impact on your finances. One of the biggest problems people have is overspending. I wish you would spend on your 401k. How about overspend there? Or your IRA. Overspend there. Put the money in there. You spent it. But we're talking about holiday spending. So how about set a limit on each person? Just set a limit. $100, $200, whatever it is that you think you can do. And then stick to it. Stick to the budget instead of breaking the budget. Now, what you can do, if you want to make it easier, why don't you put an envelope with somebody's name on it? Whoever, put various names of other people that you're going to buy gifts for, put their name on the envelope, stuff it with the money you want to spend, and then whenever you go buy something for them, take it out of that envelope, and when it's gone, it's gone. Don't use the credit card. Now, I kind of like using credit cards because I get the cash back, but can you control it? Here's another suggestion. Keep track of your gifts. You can make a spreadsheet with a list of past gifts that you've given. You can keep dollar amounts in line with previous year's giving. I kind of do that. I do that with my nieces and nephews, by the way, on birthdays and Christmas. I only buy, for me, this is how I control this, I have 40 nieces and nephews, right? 39. And 5 or 6 grandnieces and nephews. But if I'm the godfather of them, and I am the godfather of 9 of them, I buy Christmas presents for them. If I'm not, I don't. Simple as that. And I limit it to a certain age. And I let everybody, every kid know. Every parent of the kid knows that I stop buying as a godparent at 18 years old. I buy birthday presents. See, this is how I control it. Up to 13, when they become a teenager, I cut them off. They're done. You see, think about how big my family is, okay? So you can see. So the point is to set limits of some kind, and you should do that for the Christmas holiday. And that's InvestTalk Personal this hour. If there's an investment topic you would like to know more about, just send me a note. click on Contact Steve right there on investtalk.com. You can do that.
Hi, this is Jeff from Salinas, podcast listener. I've recently kept my eye on GGN, Lamco Global Gold Trust, and I was curious to know if this may be an opportunity to get in for a potential upside to gold market, and looking to get your insight on a entry point and if this is indeed a good time to get in. Thank you very much. Bye.
GGN is one of those, it is closed-end investment fund equity and securities companies engaged in the gold and natural resources industry. And of course, oil and gold, all those commodities have gone down. The thing that's very attractive about it, and the reason why he's asking, is it pays now 11.8% dividend yield. But it is still falling. It has not stopped falling. That's the problem with GGN. And I own GGN in some of our managed accounts, just so you know. That 11.8% dividend yield, they pay it monthly. Now, they don't pay 11.8% per month. They pay 11.8% per year. But the dividend is paid monthly. So every month that the dividend comes to you, that, you know, the price of the equity goes down by the amount of the dividend. So that's also putting downward pressure on it, which is kind of a bit misleading. But it is in a downtrend. I think you need to wait. It looked like the month of November it traded sideways and it was finding support. And then, of course, you had the OPEC news, and that made the thing fall down more, from $8 down to $7.12. It's getting awful close to being pretty attractive. But you got to think about, well, where's oil going to stop and where's gold going to stop? And as long as the dollar gets stronger, it's tough to argue to hold on to these things. It really is. GGN. Remember, I own this in our managed accounts, and I'm having a tough time holding on to it myself, but I still own it. But I'm going to probably get out of it. You know, I can't. It's got to stop falling. We're moving into the last segment of the hour. We've got about 10 minutes left. Let's see if we can get your question in. There's a line open for you if you want to at 888-99-CHART.
What makes a stock fit into a certain category like emerging markets? Or what's your question? Why not ask it now at 888-99-CHART on InvestTalk.
You're listening to our podcast produced 5 days a week, and we thank you for being here. Also, if you like a professional review of your retirement portfolio, even though you may live out of range of our California offices, it can still be done using email, fax, and phone. To begin the process, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Schedule a Meeting heading under Steve's picture, and someone will get right back to you.
888-99-CHART. We're going to go talk to Guy in San Jose. How you doing, Guy?
Pretty good, Steve. Love your show. It's so informative.
Thanks.
I listen to you forever.
Great.
Want to know what you think about... I'd love to talk to you about Peabody Energy.
Yeah.
You know, the coal stocks are way down.
Yeah, BTU, Peabody Energy Corp.
Yes.
What did I say a month ago? I probably didn't like it too much. But do you remember what I said about it?
Well, I remember some of your statements because I listen to you every day.
Okay.
And you just absorb an hour of mine, and I set it aside just to talk to you.
Okay. The problem with Peabody Energy, everybody, is in the coal mining business, production and sale of coal, and in 28 operations in the United States and Australia. Now, China is using coal like crazy, okay? So the mines in Australia are probably doing pretty good. The problem here is the EPA is putting more and more and more restrictions on pollution here in the United States and around the world, not just our EPA, but around the world that's happening. And so everybody hates coal. Everybody hates coal production, even though, you know, we are the Saudi Arabia of coal reserves in our ground. But it's fallen, and it's go, and you know, Guy, I don't see any reason to want to buy it. It's going to lose $1.40 a share this year after making money for years and years and years. And then next year it's going to lose 50 cents a share. It's going to improve, but it's still going to lose. And sales have been consistently going down, but their sales are going down less, meaning, you know, it's finally not less. But my issue is, China is slowing down. So maybe, you know, even though we have they have operations in Australia, maybe it's not going to be so good because China's slowing down. And our political environment for coal is pretty toxic. You know, no one likes it. Everybody hates it. Everybody loves to badmouth it. And therefore, they're going to probably just continue with more and more restrictions. So, Guy, I see no reason why to buy it. I wouldn't buy it, and I don't see any reason.
Well, you know.
Go ahead.
I'm thinking, you know, like of about a 3-year investment.
Yeah.
And I was hoping that it might come back, you know.
It might. I've
seen you quite a bit.
I'd rather see you in oil, big oil. I'd rather see you there. But that's up to you, Guy. I don't have oil yet myself, but at some point I know oil is going to come back. I'm not so sure about coal. Thanks for the call here, Guy. I appreciate it. Let's go to Pat in the Bay Area. How you doing, Pat?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
I was asking about SD Sandridge. Bought it for $4.23, 3,000 shares, and it's tanked, and I was wondering if it has any opportunity to come back.
I'm sure it will come back. This is Sandridge Energy. It's just wind. They're out of Oklahoma. They're engaged in exploration and production of crude oil and natural gas in Oklahoma and Kansas. And they're $1.1 billion. They're a small company. And their sales are going down. This is the big problem you have with this, is the debt. The debt they're carrying is very high, and it's probably junk debt. And therefore, oil prices come down. You know, Pat, it really depends on oil prices. I think that they can survive. I think they will survive. They have a pretty decent cash flow of $1.60 a share, and it's a $2.26 stock. You know, $2.22, is that what? $2.42, okay. But, you know, this is going to be an expensive ride. You are looking for, Pat, oil to stop falling. Okay, and I think, personally, Justin Klein and I have a disagreement. I think it's getting close to the bottom of the oil price fall. He thinks it's got much further to go. So there's where your problem is.
I initially purchased it for a 1% move, and I stepped away, and it made it, and I wasn't there the final transaction.
Isn't that frustrating? Yeah, it's so frustrating. Thanks for the call, Pat.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Before we close the hour, be sure to sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider. It's free, and it gives you access to our whole library of InvestTalk webinars. The latest one is ready right now, our comprehensive wealth workshop on retirement preparation. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and on behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP Financial, thanks for listening. We hope you have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.